This is Rumble Strip. I'm Erica Heilman.
There are parts of teaching that are excruciatingly boring, like giving a spelling test. God help me. I would sing the words, you know, colony. The kids are like, oh my God.
That's Daphne Calmar. Daphne was a school teacher for over 20 years in California, in Massachusetts, and then in Vermont. I think it's fair to say that Daphne was one of those teachers, one of the inspiring ones, one of the teachers who sees every kid. Daphne and I sat in her kitchen in Hardwick back in 2018 on a late August afternoon, and we talked about what it's like to fall in love with a new batch of kids every year and then let them go. Here's Daphne Calmar.
I was a teacher for 20 years. I went into teaching a little bit late because I lived all across the country doing all kinds of odd jobs. I was a short order cook for a number of years. Being a short order cook was incredibly good training for teaching because you have to juggle. It's incredibly stressful. And then when you walk into a classroom, you have to meet the needs of each of those individuals, which is extremely difficult. One is a BLT, hold the mayo, and the other is eggs over easy, and you have to juggle all of those. But I loved it. It was my passion. You know, I had like 75, 80 pairs of rubber boots, and so I outfitted each class when they came in, and we'd put numbers with nail polish on the boots so they could find them. And we'd all put our boots on, even in the rain. I had ponchos and go out and do all these experiments in the creek or the pond. Fifth grade was my favorite. Third graders were borderline. I loved them dearly, but they really are kind of like lemmings in that they will sort of walk off the cliff for you. And I love that. And they adore you, and you are a goddess. I mean, for those little guys, wow. It doesn't matter who you are, what you do, they you are their teacher. And I kind of wanted to earn it. And it was a little creepy. I shouldn't say it was a little creepy. And I couldn't go lower than third because I didn't like the whole bodily fluid thing with the little guy, the kindergartners, and, you know, they're throwing up all the time. And I had one kid in third grade who had a snot bubble running down his nose the entire year because he loved animals and he had like 20 hamsters and gerbils and snakes in his room, but he was allergic. And he had them all in his room at home. And he would just come in. He had this snot. I love that Jack. He was fabulous. I loved him, but ew. So fifth was my favorite. They're perfect. I think the human species is as perfect as it gets at 10, 11 years old. They are just starting to think abstractly and come up with these extraordinary observations about the world and questions. And they're independent and animated and curious. Their hands are just up in the air. They're running around looking at things. It's like they're just bursting. And there are no hormones till about May. So fifth grade, I think human beings are perfect. And it's sad we have to grow up. I read out loud to my students. I still read aloud to my sixth graders when I taught sixth grade, and they would, I had all these pillows and a rug, and they would all be lying on the floor, and that was when sneakers started coming up with the Velcro closures. They just came in. It was adorable because the boys and the girls sort of are noticing each other, and it was a sort of foreplay that the girls would undo the Velcro on the boys' sneakers. And I just found that to be the most charming thing. It's like having insects in the room because they'd all be undoing the closures on each other's Velcro sneakers.
It's like a creative act to be a teacher in a classroom to make this one thing together. And then you give it away.
And the kids have to give it away. You create a community together. You have in-jokes. You have rituals that you only have that year because something happened. Like, I had this one kid in fifth grade, Kyle, who couldn't sit still. And I let him stand at his desk because I don't care. If he stands at his desk and he gets his work done, that's fine with me. And the kids were fine with it. Because my one rule in my classroom is you can't be mean. You have to be nice. And we didn't do this whole let's come up with classroom rules and put them on the board. And because I think if you formalize it, you don't internalize it. If someone's mean in the classroom, we stop everything and we talk about it. If it's really important, then you do stop everything. And it might be some really trivial thing, but it was mean. So over time, it's not like it's this little Garden of Eden because we're all people, but we all are trying. And in California, the classrooms are all have a door that goes outside. They're just all one story. And so we had a door going outside, which was fantastic. But there was a landscape bank, a walkway, and then a bank. And there were these fabulous lizards that scurried around in the foliage. And Kyle was kind of obsessed with the lizards. And if he saw one, it made it very difficult for him to get anything done. So we had an arrangement. He would try really hard, but then he would signal me by tapping his forehead, and I would decide whether he could go out, and I would nod. And then he would get up, and he had to walk very quietly outside, and then he would run around like a lunatic and catch a lizard. And then he'd get it out of his system, and then he would come back. And I loved Kyle. And he accomplished a lot that year, and I think it really had to do with also the kids seeing that is okay too, is rather than my critiquing his behavior and saying, Kyle, sit down. Kyle, stop looking at the lizards. Kyle, you can't go. No, Kyle, you can't go outside. So that all the kids start to echo that, that Kyle is this kid that the teacher's always yelling at. But if Kyle has an outlet for that, then it's not just the teacher that teaches. It's not just the teacher that makes a kid feel like part of the group. It has to be the whole group. And then I took a year off, and in the next classroom, he got pretty much destroyed by the teacher because she put him out in the hallway because she said he was too disturbing during tests with all his movements and ostracized him. And and when I came back, I switched grades and I had him for another year, and we had to piece it all back together. That experience and knowing what the other teacher had done, I've never been so angry, I think, at we are the people who care for these kids and help them grow, and it made me so angry. And I think there are some teachers that are very middle class, very bourgeois, that have a very narrow range of acceptable behavior in their classroom. And it makes me nuts because that means there's a huge number of kids who are on the edges, who are marginalized, whether it's through their behavior or whatever else. They get harmed. Not only do they not grow, do they not learn, but they get harmed, they get damaged. And that's irreparable if it happens over and over. And I think the way education is working now is because it's low paying, more and more we're going to get people that perhaps don't have the ability to see beyond a kid flailing his hands around.
When you first came into a Vermont classroom, what did you... You moved to Hardwick, but you didn't know the little people in Hardwick yet. So you go into this classroom. What was your impression of these Vermont kids when you... First of all, maybe talk a little bit about where we are, about Hardwick.
It's a tiny town, 3,500 people, I think, 3,200 people, with sort of a main drag, and then another road down where there's a supermarket and two hardware stores. We have one flashing light. The nearest stoplight, I think, is in Morrisville, which is about 20 minutes away. There's a post office where everybody knows you. There are the winters, which are brutal. The climate here makes you want to hibernate. You do not want to go to work. You should be putting more wood in the wood stove, staying inside, doing survival things, you know, skinning animals, doing it. Sort of, it gets really intense. It can be a little scary. And it's lonely. So the school I taught with was not Hardwick. It was outside of Hardwick. And there's a real high percentage of kids who do not have a lot of economic advantages. I taught in a really tiny school in Vermont. I had never been in a small school. And the dynamic of these tiny little classes of kids who had been together since kindergarten. And when I was teaching middle school, we met on Monday. The kids would share what they did over the weekend. And I would hear during hunting season, that's what it was. It was all about whether they got their deer. And I had one kid who, he said, well, I went crow hunting. And, you know, I had like seven kids. Every Monday morning, we'd sit in a circle and talk about what they'd done. And they were all, yeah, did you get any? Well, I was in the woods, Cedar Woods, and I turned around and a branch stuck me right in the eye, almost put my eye out. And he had a big scratch on his face, big scratch on his face. And they're all going, what'd you do? Well, I went home, got the axe, and chopped the tree down. And so we're all just dying. Why'd you chop the tree down? And he's like, well, it poked me in the eye. And so I just love that story. But that a kid's out with a gun, first off, in the woods at 12 by himself. And then that a kid's out in the woods with an axe chopping a big tree down by himself. This was all new to me. This was all this very different world of kids who were much more free than anywhere else I've ever seen before, where they're not having play dates and you know, play dates, give me a break. They're exploring and they're getting poked in the eye. And it's really okay for kids to get poked in the eye. I mean, it's not okay for them to get permanently damaged, but that's what happens when you're a kid. You get scraped up. The hardest thing at the end of the year when I taught elementary and I had a self-contained classroom was giving my kids up at the end of the year. I was devastated because we created in the classroom this world. You shut the door on an elementary school classroom and it is a subversive act. You are responsible for those kids and you're trying to help them learn to be critical thinkers and nobody else is there. And when I would get the new batch of kids in the fall, I would be like, go away, you're not my kids. I want my kids back from last year. And it takes this tremendous leap of the first few weeks to bond with a whole new batch of kids. And then I was fine. But it was this mourning process at the end. And then taking it on again, knowing I was giving them up.
That was Daphne Calmar back in 2018. Daphne has published two books for middle-aged kids, A Stitch in Time and Stealing Mount Rushmore. You can find more information about Daphne and her books at vermontpublic.org/rumblestrip. The music for this show is by Bruce Caudron and his band Esmarine, also Vermont musicians Brian Clark and Mike D'Onofrio. Rumblestrip is a podcast distributed on the radio by Vermont Public. This is Erica Heilman. I'll be back next week with a new show. Thanks a lot for listening.